previously on Podcast Without Pretense.
So, yeah, it's an interesting little bit of trivia that not many people know. Sir Alec Guinness was originally going to play the Ghostbuster that Bill Murray played.
So I got rid of all my cats. I had none to start with, so this wasn't very hard.
I don't know. I think we should give Jonathan another shot at picking a movie.
Famous last words.
First of all, I want to say, I really appreciated that last episode where you brought things back to the origin with Uncluttered Cast. Explain how to unclutter your life of cats by not possessing them in the first place.
It was a good callback episode, you know, a bit of nostalgia involved. By the way, I'm Ayaz Akhtar.
I'm Jonathan Strickland.
And I'm Eric Sandin.
And together we watched Mummy Maniac.
Yeah, we did.
At the behest of Jonathan Strickland.
Yup.
And at this point, if you don't know how the game goes, go listen to an old episode.
You don't want me to even run it down.
Now, how long did you sit through this movie without a second screen?
Okay, yeah, that's the basic rule. So I sat through 19 minutes before I stopped it, and I stopped it for a full day before I went back. I did finish the film, but the rest of the time I had multiple screens in front of me. How about you, Eric?
I made it 23 minutes.
A little further than I did.
Probably right
into the second torture scene, I would think.
Yeah, it was about right there.
Oh, gosh. I made it 3 minutes and 26 seconds.
Wow.
And that was extensively painful. And I went to Netflix right now to see how far I got in the movie. 38 minutes total. I didn't even finish this thing.
Okay, well, I'll go ahead and spoil it for you.
I don't really think it did.
Yeah, I got. First of all, to call this a movie is a little weird in the first place because there's no narrative, right? I mean, there's no story here. It's just a series of scenes where the maniac killer has kidnapped and then tortured young women, and that's it. There's tiny little bits of connective tissue between torture scenes. But it ends up being totally meaningless. There's no actual story progression. You know just as much by the end of the film as you did at the beginning. So, which is nothing. Like there seems to be a hint of something, but there's nothing there.
And the torture scenes seem to be exactly the same, to the point where I got to, I think, the third one and checked how much time was left in the movie and just started fast-forwarding. And every time I saw a torture scene come up, I fast-forwarded, which meant that I ended up watching a total of maybe 10 minutes of the last 60 of the movie.
Probably not even that. I would say that the torture scenes were highly repetitive. It was practically the same thing over and over, slightly different. Victims 2, 4, and 5 had nudity in them.
They did. Yeah,
Which I'll have more to say on that in a second. I'm not opposed to nudity, but I was very much opposed to the way it was done in this film. So I went so far as to say to Eric earlier, and as you really can't weigh in on this necessarily since you didn't endure the rest of it. But after watching the whole thing, and I watched the whole thing, I didn't fast forward through the scenes. I am ready to call this the equal to Rock and Roll Frankenstein as far as ugly movies go.
It wasn't nearly as offensive. If it had been offensive,
to me it was offensive, but not. It wasn't so much the content of the film, but rather the execution, which is a terrible word considering we're talking about the serial killer.
The execution
of the film is what I found truly offensive.
Yeah, the fact that the movie exists is the
offensive part.
That's the issue. And I was watching the first torture scene, and I'm like, okay, well, maybe the audio is going to get better at some point. Maybe we're supposed to have this weird feel for this. Not only before we get to, I'm skipping like the best part of the movie, that we have this long dragged out scene where a stepfather's being killed, and we find this out because of I guess any narrative being done with text on the screen, and we jump like 20 years or so. And like four or five title cards are like, he killed his dad and his mom covered it up. And then he went to New York and killed a woman. And then that, it was like, wait, what? It's like, what is this? It's not like a Star Wars crawl. It was if you're going to have one black card with white text, you don't have like seven of them in a row.
Yeah, no, it definitely falls victim to the telling rather than showing. But considering the quality of the stuff they did show, I'm not sure that we missed out so much. The video work was terrible. It was video, clearly, not film. The sound was even worse. I had to turn closed captioning on because I couldn't understand
the half of it. Oh, yeah, I couldn't hear anything. Yeah.
Wait, are you actually captioning?
Wait, there actually was captioning?
Yeah. there were captions, but and this is not a joke, in about, 20 or 30 times in the film, it just comes up as unclear in parentheses.
So it was a Netflix caption.
Right, the sound was so bad. The person doing the transcription could not make it out. Anyway, I've got some notes. First of all, I'm actually going to talk about the things that the film gets right. And it's not a super short list like you would think, like, haha, what a funny joke. This is getting it right in the sense that the movie does some stuff that is based in reality. This isn't getting it right in the sense of this is a decent story or worth watching. I want to just dismiss that thought entirely. This is not worth watching. There is no story. It's supposedly based on real events, although I did some research and could not find what events this thing was supposedly based upon. The whole idea is that the killer, he kills women and then wraps up their faces in bandages, and that's why it's called Mummy Maniac. He doesn't actually mummify any of them.
No, he doesn't.
Nope. He just covers their heads in bandages and then dumps their bodies someplace. So here are some things that the film gets right. So the killer has several superficial qualities that are found in real-life serial killers. You've got the absent father figure, which is fairly common. The domineering mother, which comes up again and again in serial killer backgrounds. A history of abuse and possible sexual abuse. That seems to be hinted at, but we're never overtly told. He's a professional failure. But he's drawn to posing as an authority figure. He poses as a cop throughout the film. He has sexual fantasies of his dead victims. He associates sex with violence and power. And also, based upon the end of the movie, and Iaz, you didn't get to see how this turned out, but at the end of the film, he has these fantasies where all the victims he's killed, and I think there's five total, and maybe there's six. It might be that the sixth girl is the last one. But he has these fantasies that he's laying down in a bed, bandaged up like a mummy, and the six girls that he's killed are all leaning over him and touching him and fawning over him and that kind of thing, which actually made me think of a real-life serial killer, or at least a letter that supposedly came from a real-life serial killer, which was the Zodiac Killer, who said in a letter that what he was trying to do was claim souls to serve him in the afterlife. I thought, okay, that part I get. So he wants to be a mummy. He's thinking of the ancient Egyptians who would bring servants and animals. They would be brought into the pyramid.
Do you really think it was going that deep?
I think so. I think that's what the end was trying to say. But again, they never overtly say it. But there's no story there. It's still not a story. It's just another character element, right? So
right.
even if I'm giving them too much credit, there's still no narrative.
Yeah.
I think listening to that is probably the best part of this movie.
That's what I'm saying.
Like,
that
you explaining that, trying to find meaning in this film. Like, I'm trying to fast forward to the end now to see what this is like.
Well, I'm just saying that it's nothing special. I'm just saying that's the conclusion I came to. And it's only because I've done some, reading on serial killers in the past. And so it was one of those things where I was like, well, I'm recognizing some elements. The people who made this probably did some research. There are certain things, or at least they watched other better movies that had these features in them. But the stuff that's done poorly so far outweighs that. Like, everything I said earlier was superficial compared to this terrible stuff. And the video and sound dialogue, or the sound just in general, is terrible. The dialogue's terrible. The acting is atrocious. The first two victims don't seem at all scared. They mostly seem put out.
Yeah, you know, that's the first victim with the heavy cartoonish accent.
Yeah.
Talking about getting hot dogs with this guy.
Let's get some hot dogs.
And potentially trading him, buying him some shoes at a discount.
And she works at a really nice shoe store.
Not only that, yeah, it's kind of a Christopher Walken style accent. I think the killer responds with the line of, "Do I look like a guy who cares about shoes?" And I'm like, okay, where is this going? Maybe it's going to get good. And it never does. That's like the best part, only hoping it's going to get good.
If it makes you feel any better, there's a callback later in the movie. He's torturing one of the other girls who is studying to be an actress. And then she says, "Do you like to sing and dance?" He says, "Do I look like someone who likes to sing and dance?" And I'm like, oh, so this is a recurring thing. the torture scenes were so similar that some of the dialogue was. Like, I think in every single torture scene, if not every single one, then all but like maybe one of them, the girl at some point says, "I swear I won't tell anyone." That's done over and over again, to the point where I was like, are they just using the same dialogue from one scene to the next? Is this some sort of weird meta commentary thing? And then I'm like, no, I'm giving it way too much credit for that. But the other elements that make this movie weird, the mother is there. I don't know if the mother is really there or not. She seems to be.
She's clearly there, and I'll tell you why. Because in one of the first scenes where she shows up in a kitchen, she is casting a gigantic freaking shadow because the light is apparently less than 3 feet from her. So nobody thought about that.
It doesn't mean it can't be a hallucination.
Nope.
He can hallucinate a shadow.
He can't hallucinate that poorly lit scene.
I was very confused about the mother, too, because it seemed as if they filmed all subsequent scenes, not the kitchen, in a men's bathroom somewhere.
Yes.
Like all of them, every scene.
Well, yeah, because half of the torture implements are hanging on a urinal.
Yeah. Well, no, not only that, but he's supposed to be talking to his mom in the house. And if you look at the walls, it looks like there's a bathroom stall behind them.
Yeah.
Oh, that curtain-looking thing? Yeah, everything's like painted brick.
Yeah.
Well, they talk about there's a blue room, a green room, which is where all the torture happens, and then the dark room.
I thought the black room is where all the torture happens.
The what?
The black room.
Yeah,
black. One of the walls is also green.
Okay.
It's like the side of the
screen. I thought it was in a hallway, but either way.
Anyway, yeah,
nitpicking this movie. This is the.
It's ridiculous. I said also that in about a third of the torture scenes, the killer ends up hurting the women by hitting their hands with some sort of implement. Like, it's a riding crop in the first one and a ruler in a later one. But it's so clear that he's not hitting them very hard and the sound design doesn't help at all.
There is one point where he's supposed to be punching the girl, the victim, and there's no sound at all. And I don't even think she moves during the entire thing. You kind of just see his elbow come back and forth. I think it was victim two, maybe.
There's also a lot of sequences where they do random cutaways to stuff that clearly is not happening in that scene. And you figure, well, what is this supposed to represent? Is this what's going through the guy's mind? Because it's just distracting. It's not adding anything. It's not adding any tension. You don't care about anybody, so your tension is out the window anyway. But like, it'll show – in some of them, it shows quick cutaways where you see the girl laying topless with her wrists bound and her legs bound. And kind of squirming around, and then it cuts back to the torture scene where in every single torture scene, the girl is seated in a chair, and she's not bound or restrained in any way. I also thought it was really weird how he would go to hurt the girls, and none of them would raise their hands in defense, which is the most natural reaction to anyone coming at you at all, and none of them do it. So, you know, he's like cutting their necks or whatever, depending upon the scene, because he kills them in different ways. And they're just like, their hands are still by their sides. I'm like, well, that's weird because they're not tied. They're clearly, you know, free to move their arms. I thought that was really weird. I also said that, the women don't appear to be physically restrained in any way, blah, blah, blah. About half the victims are shown naked in cutaways. And in other cutaways, we see the killer picking up different tools or weapons, but he's not using them at all. You just see this quick cutaway of an arm reaching out and grabbing a hatchet or a saw or whatever. But then it cuts back and it's just back in the regular torture scene where he doesn't have that tool in his hand. He's still just very quietly talking to the girl. And, you know, it's just another one of those things where it's like, I don't understand what effect they're trying to go for here, other than just being disorienting. Maybe they're trying to give a sense of this person is crazy, and this is a sense of how they're crazy, but it just comes across as confused. So, anyway, the thing that really bothered me about this movie is it's just incredibly sleazy. So, the story is of a serial killer who targets women. And, you know, unfortunately, there are real-life examples of exactly that, right? There are plenty of examples of crazy, sadistic sociopaths who have hunted women. So this is something that we've seen in films before. But in particular, the way the camera works, I always felt like the camera was violating the actress playing the victim. It wasn't so much that this is a terrible thing happening to this character. It felt to me like this is a terrible thing happening to this actress in the sense of the way the camera was moving over the actress and concentrating on things like her legs or her breasts or whatever. And I was like, I feel awful about watching this movie, not because of the things that are happening in it, but because the way it was shot.
I felt the exact same way when it came to I don't know which scene it was, but they start doing random cutaways to the same shot of this naked body, right?
Yeah.
And eventually you see that victim at some point. It's like number two or three. And then you see the same shot over and over and over again throughout the entire movie. Like, I felt horrible at that point. I was like, no, this is just bad.
Yeah, no, I like I said, that's why I put it up there with Rock and Roll Frankenstein. It's not for the content of the film. It's for the way it was shot. It just felt like it was objectifying women in such a base and awful manner that you feel dirty after watching it. And it could have been any story at all, but if it had been shot that way, you still would have felt that kind of sense of unease. It didn't matter that it was a horrible story about a serial killer. It could have been any kind of story. And it's just because of the way they composed and executed their shots. I also thought it was kind of funny that when at one point he's talking to apparently a psychiatrist. I don't know why he's seeing a psychiatrist. Typically, serial killers don't seek help. He didn't seem to be compelled to go, so I don't know what the deal was. But anyway, he's talking to the psychiatrist, and he says that his mom used to tell him stories like the 1001 Nights. I just thought it was funny that the closed captioning spelled that as K-N-I-G-H-T-S. So, like Camelot and his enormous posse. So there was that weird connection with Marines. Apparently the killer was going into the Marines and got kicked out. But the mom just keeps harping on about the Marines over and over and over again. And there's never any explanation of the significance there. So again, just like,
well, there was one line that tried to fix that, which was I believe he was actually talking to the psychologist, and he did say his dad was a Marine. I remember that line happening.
And his mom wanted him to go into the officers' candidate school to become a commissioned officer.
Right.
And it didn't work out. But then there are scenes where, again, you don't know if they're chronologically ordered or not, but the mom is berating the killer about not making it into the Marines. And she's also like, at one point early in the movie, she makes him suck his thumb, which again, that's actually pretty close to the accounts of some serial killers talking about their childhoods. It's not, and even going into adulthood, it's not something that is completely unheard of. It looked ridiculous. The actual way that it came across wasn't effective, but it was at least based in reality.
Right.
Anyway, long story short, sleazy, awful movie. I did a great job picking that one.
You did. It was pretty damn horrible.
I'm not gonna pick the next one though.
I don't think you should be allowed to pick any more movies.
I disagree. In fact, I think our tens of listeners.
No, I think for the rest of your life, no matter where you're going, not even for this show. I just mean you are not allowed to pick movies.
A film ever.
You're just gonna go to the ticket counter at the movie theater and be like, "I will see a movie," and they will give you a ticket. and you'll go into that place because that is the fate you deserve after like this. You know, it's not like you made this movie, though. Whoever made this movie, the fact that there was money involved and obviously a VHS camcorder, that was probably the budget of what, maybe hundreds of dollars. I can't fathom how this got made.
Well, apparently the producer or one of the producers of this film has also produced a host of other extremely low budget, like nasty kind of horror movies. Movies with the same sort of sensibility as this one. So I guess maybe the producer just, either it's just one of those things where they see that it's so cheap that there's no problem at all turning around a profit, or this producer has a particularly nasty streak in him or her.
This is the only movie where Ben Stewart has played a role, according to IMDb, as Michael Savage in 2007. wow. There's the first crew, second crew. The first crew is three people.
Sounds about right.
And the second crew appears to be two. Wow, this is a really slow credit sequence.
Well, yeah, and I gotta say also that the movie itself is incredibly slow. Like, there's really not that much in the film. If you were to cut out all the super long pauses that are there for no reason, or the really long driving sequences that just show you lots of traffic out of focus and in weird, like, superimposed images, if you cut all that out, this movie would be maybe 22 minutes long.
There's a scene in the beginning of the movie where this guy, the killer, is standing on, like, I guess a rooftop, and he's looking down to the ground, and he's got binoculars on. He's taking a look and seeing the city. Now, there's a tremendous amount of car horn noises and what sounds to be traffic. But the video clearly shows you nearly no traffic and moving traffic. No gridlock, no nothing. And I'm like, why on earth? Like, could they not look at the video?
It would make perfect sense if it were set in Boston, because even if traffic's moving, you still have people honking at each other all the time. But it's set in New York.
Set in New York. All the honky. I was like, what? It's that simple. I mean, why would you have that kind of inconsistency? It's not like the movie's really very good at taking you away and feeling like, oh, I'm escaping into this magical world of a black room that's painted with high gloss black paint with big light spots. Oh, man.
No, it's bad. It's bad.
It was shot on location in Los Angeles and New York City. Wow.
All right. Well, you know, this leads into the other thing I wanted to talk about tonight, which I sent a link to you guys earlier. The reasons for admission to an insane asylum list that was compiled between the years 1864 to 1889.
We would have been screwed, by the way.
Yeah. The West Virginia hospital list for the insane. I like some of the reasons for admission. Some of them, you know, kicked in the head by a horse. Okay. So someone's, you know. But there's some other great ones in here. There's a imaginary female trouble. That's excellent. There's menstrual deranged. So that's forward thinking right there. No relation to my series, forward thinking. There's marriage of son. Was a reason for admission to an insane asylum. Novel reading, another one. You know, there's probably some woman deciding to read a book. Wait a minute.
Why parents, is there
parents were cousins.
There's deranged masturbation, and then there's tobacco masturbation and self-abuse.
Tobacco and masturbation.
Yeah, why is that actually put together?
I actually posted on Facebook. I said, well, I can understand this because I always smoke when I masturbate, but it's probably because I do it too quickly.
Masturbation and syphilis. Another one.
Yeah, no, there's a lot of masturbation in this list.
I've had some bad whiskey, but I don't think any of it, you know, would necessarily put me in an asylum.
I also see that there's bad company, which makes sense because whenever I hear feel like making love, I go nuts.
What the hell does mental excitement mean?
Ayaz. You don't have that.
For I don't have emotions. Vicious vices. Now I have those. Right? I got vices that are troublesome.
Yeah. Fighting fire.
Time of life?
Fighting fire. That's bizarre. There's the war. It's just the war. Uterine derangement. Let's see. Women trouble. I like that one too. I was like, yeah.
The women.
Here's a legitimate reason. Shooting of daughter. Yeah, that works. Snuff eating for 2 years. That sounds like a compulsion. Okay.
Female disease.
I don't know what gathering in the head means, unless you just were getting groups together in the restroom. Yeah, it keeps on gathering in the head.
Overstudy of religion. I like that one.
Yeah. Rumor of husband murder. Not murdered her husband. Rumor of husband murder.
Oh, I like this one. Periodical fits. So I'd be admitted right now.
Salvation Army is one of the reasons. Seduction and disappointment. So I guess that's someone who went out, seduced someone, got them into bed, and was like, ugh, that wasn't worth it.
Wait, ill treatment by husband. So
fell from horse in war.
Why in war? What's so specific?
It's very specific. Yeah.
Hard study. Couldn't that all be classified under the war?
I also like they're admitted to a mental asylum for asthma.
Well, that's a reason to be admitted.
To a hospital, but not a mental hospital. Why aren't you breathing, crazy person?
Fever and loss of lawsuit.
See, if it had been just one or the other, that person probably would have been fine.
This guy's just having a bad day.
I like that one of them is just politics.
Yeah, that's my favorite.
Where is this list from, by the way?
Well, apparently it's from the West Virginia Hospital for the Insane. Looks like it's an asylum that's still open, but only for tours. But we found it on the Dangerous Minds blog. So just in case people want to hunt down and read the whole list, although we've read through most of the really good ones. Carbonic acid gas, another reason.
Congestion of brain.
Decoyed into the army. I like deranged masturbation. That one in particular. I just imagine some guy just going,
hey. Oh, wait, this kind of sounds fantastic. Sorry, I clicked over to the actual asylum. They have a haunted house.
Yeah.
That sounds like so much fun.
That's a great idea.
Haunted house and asylum.
Wow, that's kind of amazing. I'm looking at the site right now. I don't see the haunted house thing. I see ghost tours.
Yeah, it's on the events.
Oh, okay. That's kind of cool. I told you guys about the haunted attraction thing that they're doing not too far from my house, right?
What's that?
The train thing. Did I not tell you that last week? I can't remember.
You mentioned it. I don't think you went into it, though.
Oh, okay. Well, it's just a neat idea. It was one that I'd never heard of before, where the idea is that it's a train that was hauling all these artifacts, sort of like cult artifacts this guy had been collecting. And the story is that the train derails. And so the actual haunted attraction is a maze made up of old train canisters that have fallen off due to the derailed train. So you have to make your way through this maze and stuff keeps jumping out from the canisters. And I just thought that was a neat twist on the haunted house, you know, model.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. The one here that they're doing is really cool. It's it's a zombie containment facility, but it's got like a full narrative and stuff to it. But the best part about it is they actually went to like the point of taking out ads in like the local free paper and stuff that had warnings about the outbreak and like put up fake news stories about different things happening around town, and even got the local news station to do a fake segment on it. You know, they went all out. It was kind of amazing.
Yeah. There's also, we have the Atlanta zombie apocalypse attraction. And, that also includes, different experiences, three huge horror shows. It says Curse of the Dead ? And Zombie Killer. The zombie killer one is where you get a you get a paint gun, a paintball gun, A paintball gun, and you get to shoot zombies.
That must be a thing now. There's a place here, in Moriarty, a little bit away, that's doing the same thing. It's like a giant maze, and you can run a paintball and go shoot zombies.
Yeah, Return of the Curse of the Undead is the name of one of them, because Curse of the Undead, I guess, was a previous one. And then the other one is the Super Secret Attraction, where I guess you have to just pay to go and experience it. It says, will you make it? People have had heart attacks, soiled their pants, took the chicken exit after the first room. What will you do when the zombies come for you? It sounds like an interesting thing. I've never done any of these. My wife has talked about the possibility of going into the containment one, which is the train one I was telling you about, but which shocked me because she's generally not someone who's into the whole horror element, but we might actually give that a go because I think that might be an interesting experience. I haven't done I can't remember the last time I did a haunted house type attraction, apart from something that doesn't count like the Haunted Mansion at Disney World.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I don't know the last time I actually did one of those either, to be honest.
Yeah. All right, so we've talked about mummy maniacs, and we talked about reasons to get committed to an insane asylum in the 19th century. What else you guys want to talk about?
I don't know. How's it been going?
Pretty good. Eric, how's it been going? How many cable boxes are you up to?
I'm holding steady with what I got for right now, but I did end up... I got a Nexus 7, which I've been playing with.
Oh, yeah?
Oddly enough, they sent me the wrong cable for it. It came with a mini USB instead of a micro.
What? But,
that is weird.
I do not know how that happened. Was it used? It was refurbished, but still factory refurbished.
I've got a Nexus 7 that is now dead. I don't know what happened to it. I had set it aside and just kind of misplaced it for a good couple of months, which didn't bother me because I'm not really a tablet user. But when I found it, I thought, oh, all right, well, I can plug this in. This will be, I can read my Kindle books on it, and et cetera. And so I plugged it in. Nothing. There's no charge at all. It's not charging. It's just dead. So don't know that I'll replace it because, like I said, it wasn't like I was missing it while I had actually misplaced it. So
yeah, I mean, I mainly got it because I haven't had a tablet. So I had a Nook Color, but
that doesn't count.
Yeah, I had the Nook, whatever it was. Yeah, the Nook Color, I think. But yeah, so I haven't had a real functioning tablet, and I saw it cheap, and I was like, well, screw it, why not?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm just not the right person for tablets. I guess I could have used it to watch, something on one of the streaming media sites that we use while my wife watches something on the other one. So, that's really the only thing I could come up with.
Well, how do you consume content? What do you use, like a laptop?
No, I watch television. I've got a TV hooked up to my Xbox.
Okay.
So I mostly watch, and I also have Chromecast.
So what is your second screen when you're giving up these movies? Is that why you watch these whole things because you don't have a second screen?
He doesn't have any side device.
I do have a laptop, but I don't tend to use my laptop to watch stuff. I like to, I don't want to have a weight on me.
No, I just mean it's a secondary device. Like right now, I've got a tablet in my hands.
My secondary device is usually, if I'm talking about my TV, is my primary. My secondary is usually a laptop. I also have my smartphone. My Nexus 4, which I use all the time. Like, I didn't use a tablet very much, but I use the phone all the time.
I don't really use my phone for much. Go figure.
Well, we know that. You got rid of it for a while.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out a way to do a data-only iPhone. I think I can do it.
Weren't you trying to figure that out, like, 3 years ago?
But this one, I could use a Verizon Nano SIM from... that I can activate in an iPad mini or an iPad. And then I can just pop it into the iPhone. So instead of having to carry two devices, I can just have the one. Because while I do have a phone now, when I really need data is when I'm in the city. And that's where I know nothing. And that's where T-Mobile's like, yeah, you don't need anything but edge speeds, right?
Yep. So
I can't find anything. I can't do anything with any
sense of... That is T-Mobile at my house. They're like, well, you don't really want to make phone calls at home, do you?
Yeah, so that's I'm ready to try that out. And if not, I don't want to pay $650 for an iPhone, though. It's kind of expensive.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. Why don't you just get the Nexus 5 when it comes out?
I could, if it runs on Verizon. I don't know if it will.
Oh, that's true. Verizon.
That's my that's my hang up, is I want to be on Verizon, because I've had a Verizon iPad for, I don't know, a year or two, and that to me, that's been fantastic. The network is just ridiculously robust everywhere I go. So,
right.
So instead of me being good.
I'm sorry?
I was going to say something negative now.
Oh, I was just going to say that, you know, for me, T-Mobile is great because it's got a particularly strong presence in Atlanta. Granted, when I travel around, that's when I start having some issues, but I don't do that much travel. So it's not like it's something that happens to me frequently. And since it works fine for home, it's a great choice for me. But yeah, I totally understand. Like, I remember when I was doing a trip with my wife in California, we did a road trip where we took essentially the Pacific Coast Highway from San Francisco, and we went all the way down to San Diego, ultimately, which was great. It was a week-long trip. It was a lot of fun. Saw a lot of sights. But for a good 60% of it, we didn't have any phone service.
All right, now time for negative stuff. We don't really have segments, but why not? So today, I was goofing around before a show, and somebody suggested I go buy thisdrunknerd.com. I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. Why not do it? I was going to do a beer podcast, so it kind of work, right?
Oh, was that what you were talking about earlier?
Yeah, that's what I was talking about on Twitter.
Right.
And some,
this is the one that Eric bought?
Probably. And if you do hear a dog, that was mine, and not don't blame Jonathan for that. But yeah, so some jerk on the live stream decided to buy the domain.
No.
They bought it, and then they're redirecting it to KnowHow, which is nice, but I didn't get the opportunity to buy it. It's this kind of like this amazingly jerk move at like 9:50. Like, why the audience would choose to do that, I'm not really sure.
Here's a lesson to learn here, Ayaz. It happens to every person who ever says anything about registering something like that on a live stream. Happens all the time. So, for example, the guys over at Rooster Teeth talk about how when they come up with an idea for a joke, the first thing they do is go and register the domain before anyone else can, before they make the joke public, because they've had that experience where they make the joke, someone else goes out there and registers it before they can, and then they can't capitalize on it. So it's not something that happens just to you. It's just kind of this universal thing where I think it's so easy to register these things that people just jump on it immediately because there's no effort involved.
I just can't see the rationale behind doing that unless you dislike the person. It's like, why bother doing, like, what is, so this person spent at least, let's say $10 just to annoy me, which is kind of nice if you think about it. It's like, wow, okay, this guy, they're spending money to irritate me. But why bother? Like, what are they going to do with that? Well, that being said, I don't plan on doing the show called This Drunk Nerd anyway. So I saved myself $13.50 because I had a promo code. So that's nice. I looked at it that way by the end of the day. It was just this little, you're the audience. Don't be, so if you're listening to this and you're like, I hate audiences, that's very true. I hate each and every person that listens to me.
I don't want to give the wrong impression. I really do loathe all of you.
I have to say such horrible things. So then you have reason to scoop a URL for me. That's such just a dick move, whoever you are.
I don't have anything negative I want to say on this podcast. I'm going to leave it at that. Eric, how are you?
I see. Yet again, Nexus 7 tablet. Other than that, I'm all right.
You guys going to Vegas in January?
I am.
I see Jonathan already booked his tickets.
Yep. Did that. I needed to get ahead of it. Looks like I'm going to possibly shoot some forward-thinking content while I'm down there, so that could be fun.
Forward-thinking at a consumer electronics show? Makes no sense.
Yeah, no. No, it'll be great. And I already booked my room. I'm on the opposite end of the strip as I've been from the one that I've been on in the last, like, 3 years. So I'm no longer at the LVH, which is where I used to stay. I'm on the other end. But since that's the end where they have the CES preview now, which is at Mandalay Bay, I was like, why do you do that to me? Ridiculous, having to go all the way across from the north end of the strip to the south end of the strip to get to this event. But now I'm staying there, and I'll just have to travel the really long distance just to get to the regular show. So, you know, it'll be fine. But I booked a room. I don't even mind saying where it is. I booked a room in the Luxor because it was one of the less expensive hotels.
Which one is the Luxor?
That's the pyramid one.
Oh, that's a weird one.
It's near the Excalibur. Yeah, because it was built during those times when they were trying to attract all the families. So it's built near the Excalibur and Mandalay Bay.
Yeah, I went there once. I didn't stay in the hotel. I was just there to eat dinner. There's some fusion stuff, which I really didn't care for, actually, now that I remember that. But it's just a weird construction of that in that pyramid because there's this giant atrium, right? You can look straight up, and obviously the floors look very strange because it's a pyramid. You have this giant light shining through the top. It's just very strange. And since, Jonathan, you're going to spend all your time at this hotel, clearly.
Well, you know me. I'm constantly in my room.
Right. That's going to be a real problem. Is it actually is it themed within the rooms as a pyramid?
I've never been in there, so I think it's just like contemporary hotel room. It doesn't have the Eye of Horus on the door, as far as I know.
Hit the hotel button and on the website, and the first image is of a woman who's like on her back in bed with her legs kind of folded over each other, with a guy laughing over her.
Yeah,
it seems really creepy.
Here's a fun place for you to fall on top of your woman, like you're Mike Myers in every frickin' movie Mike Myers has ever done.
Oh, I've forgotten all about that stuff. This Mike Myers fellow.
Oh, I keep falling down on top of my attractive female co-star. Oh.
Pyramid Deluxe Room. You got a Tower Deluxe. What'd you get, the Player Deluxe?
I think I'm in the standard Tower Room.
Tower Luxury, sure, then.
No, not that one. It's the other one.
The Utility Closet Luxury.
Yes. I'm in the maintenance closet. I share my bed with a bucket and a mop.
Hey, wait a second. No, it says Pyramid Deluxe Room, Tower Deluxe Room, Pyramid Suite.
I guess it is Tower Deluxe Room, then.
Tower Deluxe Room. That's what they came up.
I don't know
up.
Why it would be. Why is it called Deluxe?
Because you got two chairs.
Yeah, I guess so.
That's deluxe, man.
It's Deluxor.
Oh, God, that was horrible. That was incredibly bad.
Oh, I'm happy. Yeah, I I've been making some really awful puns like that recently, so I've been on the kind of a tear.
Why? Why have you been doing
this
to the world?
It just happens, Sometimes I'm always bad about it, but I've been particularly punny over the last few days. But yeah, I'll be in the Luxor. Either you guys going?
I am registered to go. I should make a plan if I'm going to go. Maybe. I have no plan yet to go.
I'll have to talk it over. I don't have a plan. My problem right now is I have like two places I have to go, or else people will get angry at me. So let me do that first, which is Portland and Chicago, but. Hopefully I can convince one of them that Las Vegas is a better idea.
Well, is it during that same week? The week of CES that you have to go? Or is it just like a no?
One of them's probably the end of December. So it would be,
it'd be close, but not quite the same. Because it's the second week of January, really, or the first full week of January, I guess. Where this is this is taking place. But, I mean, I ended up booking a long stay again. I keep telling myself every year, I'm like, I'm going to just go for a couple of days instead of a full thing. But when I know that I'm going to be shooting content and I realize that I've got to have enough time to scope out the best stuff to shoot with, then it means that and I don't have a team. It's me and my director. Then I have to pretty much a lot more time so I can find the right stuff. Nah. It would really be awful. Like, I'm staying next to a wind-up bunny rabbit that shoots sparks out of its butt, and it's the best thing I could find. And meanwhile, everyone else is covering the most amazing new technology that I just haven't gotten around to seeing yet.
I'm trying to think, is there anything exciting that's come out of CES in the past couple of years? Because it's just been like 3D TVs, 4K TVs.
Yeah, no, it's all been ultra-high definition televisions. Yeah. 3D has pretty much kind of faded away.
Then it's what? It's I think CTIA took over a lot of that stuff. Mm-hmm. A lot of the phone announcements are there. That's what people are excited about.
Yeah, Microsoft went away. See, like the big news stories last year was more all about who showed up and who didn't show up.
Yeah.
It wasn't about actual stuff.
Was last year the whole Dish Hopper mess? I guess that would be this year.
That might have been this year. I do know also there was the I'll tell you what the big thing that got everyone excited at CES last year was: the haptic fork. You guys remember hearing about that when CES was out?
Is that the one that actually checks what you eat?
It ends up measuring how much time you are spending moving the fork. So if you're moving the fork too frequently, so it suggests that you're eating too quickly. And at that point, the haptic fork begins to vibrate to alert you that you're eating too quickly and you need to slow down.
Oh,
and that actually got – and I'm not joking. That actually got some buzz on the floor simply because it was such a silly idea that was not an ultra-high-definition television, right? So it was something that was different. And that's the thing. That's getting to be the problem at CES, is that you're seeing so much of the same stuff that anything that's different, no matter how kind of silly or ridiculous it is on the face of it, becomes an object of intense interest. Because what else are you going to talk about? This incredible TV that's insanely thin is just as wonderful as this other incredible TV that's insanely thin.
Well, this is very depressing then. It's going to be... So if I go to Vegas, it's going to be like, look, TVs. Okay. I mean, most of Vegas is about the parties, but apart from that, just... Eh.
Well, every now and then you get surprised. You might see something that you think is either particularly well designed, or it's a piece of technology that doesn't, it defies categorization. Those are the great moments. It's just, you usually can only find one or two really cool things per show. I'm sure there are many more than one or two cool things per show. But again, you're talking about such an enormous show that's very difficult to sort through everything. I tell my friends who every year, I get friends who say, I'm so jealous that you get to go to this thing. And my response is, all right, so imagine the biggest mall you've ever been in, and every single shop in that mall is a Radio Shack. And it's your job to go through every single aisle of every single Radio Shack and look at every single object on there and try and pick out the ones that are worth talking about. That is what CES is. So it's not nearly as exciting as a lot of people think.
It's a pretty good summary. Yeah.
Yeah. But you guys should come.
Just for the late night activities.
Well, yeah, we could figure out some other ridiculous thing to do. We've broken into a casino, so we've got that
under. We entered one. We didn't break into anything.
Did we go into a...
So what opened the door for us?
Let me ask you this. Did we go into a customer-approved entrance?
None whatsoever. Or was
it? No, it was not a customer approved entrance.
It was customer approved. You're right.
It was no approved. I apologize for my muttering, but I would say that we went into an entrance that was not meant for the general public to go into.
And that's still a good story. That's the point.
I love that we turn, I guess the casino's this way. We take a turn and we're immediately in front of the security desk. well, that was a bad choice. And then they very nicely asked if they could help us.
All right. I am just looking through my Flipboard here and seeing people disliking what I said about some Apple products. I got called an Apple hater for the second time ever. On Tuesday, I was like, "Wow, that's impressive."
It's really unfair because I mean, you hate everything, so yeah, they don't need them.
It's like I've been called an Apple fanboy, an Apple hater, a Microsoft fanboy, and a Microsoft hater. So I guess I'm doing my job right if they think I hate everything.
Yeah, at least you're not giving anyone any preferential treatment.
Yeah, they all suck equally. Like the audience.
I can't wait to see Podcasts Without Pretense skyrocketing through the iTunes rankings.
Podcasts Without Pretense without an audience. This is going to be. Maybe that should be the. You know, we should just rename this right now. Podcasts Without an audience. Let's see if that's available. Let me check it right now. Surely I'm not live streaming this. So, podcast without audience, without an audience.
I just do without audience.
Yeah.
PWA, because you know.
Let's see. Podcast without audience. Let's see. It's still looking. It is available. Podcastwithoutaudience.com. The weird thing is the third suggestion. So you know, podcastwithoutaudience.net. And this one says capturedaudience.com.
So here's the question, though, is that if we did Podcast Without Audience and then it became popular, would we have to stop?
No, we would just ignore that they exist like we do now.
Just talk about how we hate them and make it some sort of weird passive-aggressive codependent relationship.
Like, why we end the show with every week of like, why are you still listening to this?
Screw you, chuckleheads!
Whoa! Such language. And also, the whoa is because of the... How many subscribers do you think we have right now?
I'm going to say 117.
I'm going to go higher. I'll go 120.
177.
Whoa. Wow!
Yeah. And we've been... 198 is our biggest amount here back on the 15th. But 177... You know, I have been talking about this podcast more on air, but I seriously have no idea why people are listening now.
I think it's because my dog was on last week.
It's also because since we have 177, and this is, of course, the episode where I'm like, I hate the audience, which this is a great clip to take out of context. You know, I really hate the audience.
Yeah, there you go. What are you talking about? It was in context.
I was like giving one right now.
Yeah, I was about to say it because it wasn't like, you know, I hate the audience that doesn't appreciate your work. That kind of thing. It wasn't like that. No, it was just I hate the audience.
Nah, it's that one guy who took my URL. So yeah. So if you've downloaded this episode and you're like, I'm gonna buy podcasts without an audience or without audience, it's all yours. I don't care. That's just too damn long to type.
He says that as he's registering the domain, which will direct. Are you really gonna just a? It'll direct people to a page that just says, fuck you, got there first.
It just says first with a U. But podcast without audience is too damn long to type.
Yeah, I'm guessing PWA is taken.
Let's find out. Pwa.com, is it available? It should be like Pwa Show. let's see. Pwa.ac is available for $80. I don't know what the AC stands for.
That would be PWAC.
PWAC. There's PWA.MX.
How about that would be Podcast Without an Audience, chuckleheads.
That's not too bad. Because it's a call-in show because they have .tel. PWA.XXX, $90.
Yeah, fantastic.
Wait, really? It's only 90 for the triple.
$90. Pwa.sh. Pwash. I like Pwash. That's interesting. let's see. PWA.org. Only $7,888.
I think I have a
steal.
We can get johnpwa.com. I don't know why they put the name John in front of it. But johnpwa.com.
Oh, Jonathan's Podcast Without an Audience. Fantastic. That's the branding message I want to make.
Well, why is it? But it's actually just putting first names in front of things. Chris Pwa, David Pwa.
Did you guys see that? Unrelated note. Did you guys see that? I my forward thinking audio podcast made the Stitcher's must hear list on science podcasts earlier this week.
I've not heard of it. You did not. You should announce that somewhere, like on a podcast.
Well, here's the funny thing. So it was a couple of episodes about fitness, which were recorded while I was on vacation. So I'm not actually on those episodes.
It's a great episode.
I don't know how to interpret that, but we just did.
I would take it pretty badly if I were you.
Thank you. Yeah, I know you would.
But the episode where we won an award, oh, I wasn't there.
Oh, that's okay. I kind of have that story. Last week, so my company does this employee appreciation thing where the different teams vote for somebody who they think is working really hard and doing whatever. And I won that. And at the company meeting, you know, people get up and talk about you and they give you the award and they give you some money and whatever, gift cards, stuff. Well, I was sick that day, and so I come in the next day, and everybody's like, hey, congratulations, and I'm like, well, what did I do? They're like, oh, you won, you know, everybody thinks you're doing a great job, and I'm like, huh. And then, of course, they come up, and they're like, we had great stuff to, you know, great stuff to make fun of you with, and, you know, we actually had jokes and stuff lined up, and I'm like, huh, yeah, I know when not to come in.
Nice. Yeah, I got an award from my company recently, which it was called a D-Lighter Award, as in we delight audiences, things like that. And Forward Thinking One is an internal award. And the trophy, the little thing that they give out, is a lamp, because it's a D-Lighter Award, which is actually a pretty nice gift because, as it turns out, our new office space that we're in Atlanta is an open office environment. And most of the people I work with in my department, the editorial department, are very introverted. So we're now in an open office environment. They don't have their little cubicle walls to hide inside. Mm-hmm. So everyone's out in the open. So the first thing they did was they decided to turn all the lights off on that side of the office. And I'm an extrovert, so now I'm sitting in the dark with a bunch of people who are trying desperately to ignore each other. And so I actually like the fact that I've got a lamp, because it means that I'm no longer just kind of sitting in a little dark dungeon or something. Now, we do have an entire wall that's essentially windows to the outside. But Atlanta's had some fairly gloomy weather over the last few days when I've been in the office, so it's been pretty dark.
Yeah, but I hate the open office thing. Is it going to pass soon?
I would hope so. We did some research on open office studies, like studies that have been done about companies that have the open office environment. We did some research on that for an episode of the Forward Thinking Audio podcast. Which I think is coming. I think it came out today, in fact. And in that research, we found that they did a meta study where they looked at lots of different surveys, and they found that 90% of the surveys about open office environments found that they increased employee aggression, employee dissatisfaction, and employee turnover. So that was something where, you know, I look at this and I'm like, well, what company? I realize that it saves money, and that's ultimately the reason why a lot of these companies are making this move. But if you see this, especially the employee turnover, which is costing a lot of money.
Yeah, how does that save money if the employee turnover is high?
Yeah, so that's, you know, it's one of those things where I just wonder if the research hasn't been disseminated enough through corporate culture for companies to say, you know, this is probably a bad move and we should probably not do this. It'll save us a lot of headaches down the road. I don't know if that's the case, or I don't know. I don't know what the motivations are. I just know that there are people who are introverted who don't like it. I personally, I find it's not bothering me that much. Not as much as I thought it would. I'm actually the only thing that's kind of upsetting, not even upsetting, just sort of disappointing, is that there's not enough space at a workstation for you to really personalize it in any way.
Right.
So it does feel a little like you're all, you know, clones or something, because all the workstations, you know, it's really hard to personalize it. The back wall of our workstations, you can just imagine one long table with lots of workstations at it, but it has a little tiny back wall to it. That you could stand up and look over at the other side. Well, that back wall, the material, it's just this thin fabric stretched over metal. So you can't even put a push pin through it. So you can't hang anything up. So it's engineered to not allow you to personalize it in any way.
You just use a magnet?
I don't know if it's a ferrous metal. I haven't tried. It might be. If it's non-ferrous, then that doesn't do you any good.
Now you're going to have to, maybe tack things on or glue stuff. There we go.
Yeah, apparently,
that'll personalize it.
Apparently, tape doesn't stick to the fabric very well either, according to what some of my coworkers have said. I have not attempted these methods to personalize my space. I gave up immediately. I saw it was, a hopeless cause. So
cheery.
It really is. I'm making it sound like it's awful. To me, I thought it was fine. Really. I mean, I miss having the space that I did before, but it's not affecting me that much at my job. I'm sure some of my other coworkers have stronger feelings about it, but you do what you gotta do.
Should we look into the future?
Let's do that.
Since we actually looked at how many subscribers we have for the first time in three episodes. All right. Next week on Podcast Without Pretense.
So Eric and I went camping and I left him there, which is why he's not on this show.
If you've ever stepped on a Lego, it's about the same as stepping on an outlet cover. It's quite enjoyable.
These are probably right. old.
So, recording number two. So I'm looking at the reviews for Podcasts Without Pretense.
Wait, there are reviews?
Yeah, on iTunes. There are seven ratings, all 5 stars. Okay.
Yeah.
Customer reviews. There are a total of 4. Enjoyable. This is from Love Health Success, written September 20th, 2011. Enjoyable. It represents well the basis for the belief that very interesting, naturally entertaining, and highly intelligent show hosts will almost always produce content that's worth a listen. True here for sure, as the host's perspective and presentation even made Kevin Bacon movies a worthwhile topic on a recent episode. Ha! I'm equally as sure that my rather lukewarm opinion of the movie Footloose, starring Kevin Bacon, hasn't changed, as I'm sure I will indeed continue to eagerly anticipate downloading and enjoying each new episode of Podcast Without Pretense. Thank you.
Wow.
Whoa. Ah.
I feel like we suddenly have a greater responsibility, and now I'm scared.
Here's another one. Oddly Enjoyable Podcast by Bill Nobbs. The rambling nature of this podcast is completely arbitrary, overly self-effacing, and seemingly pointless, making it much more enjoyable than so many podcasts that operate under the premise that they have well-thought-out and valuable content to impart to their listeners.
We certainly don't have that premise.
That was November 27th, 2011. Here's the most recent one, August 7th, 2013, by Jambino2. I love how these guys start the podcast like we're picking up in the middle of conversation. Also, love the bad movie reviews. Keep them coming. Maybe not every week, but occasionally. How else could I found the greatest film of all time, Senorita Justice?
Oh, a lot of boob shots in that. Clothed boob shots.
I guess in all fairness to the fourth person who did review us, let's get this one out. A Breath of Fresh Air, July 18th, 2012, by JC Plugs. I heard about your podcast during Forecast's final episodes, and I thought I'd try it out because the title was interesting, with an E. Interesting, I guess. I gave it a listen and really enjoyed it. It's unlike any other podcast I listen to. It flows very well, and the hosts are great. I highly recommend this podcast to anyone that needs to laugh. 5 stars. And wow. It does. We do have an explicit tag now. We're under the society and culture section, which I completely forgot about.
That makes sense, I guess.
And
here's the thing, is that ultimately this show is little more than a thinly veiled opportunity for 3 friends who don't live anywhere near each other to have some time to talk at each other. Maybe not with, but at.
Well, it's, okay, so related podcast.
It is a slightly longer form of our Twitter conversation.
Listeners also subscribe to Generation X3 Audio by Mevio. I don't know that one. G-Week, Cool Stuff We Love by Boing Boing. This Week in Fun, so they're still listening to This Week in Fun, which I think has stopped about 3 years ago. Scam School.
Brian Brushwood.
By the way, here our competition, by the way, in the society and culture section. And we need to take these guys down, all right? This can't happen anymore. Because This American Life is beating us. Freakonomics Radio.
Ira Glass still up there.
Fresh Air from WHYY. Stuff You Should Know podcast.
Yeah. I knew that one was coming.
Dan Carlin's Hardcore History. History Extra. Stuff You Missed in History Class.
Yeah.
Pop Everything. StoryCorps. The Splendid Table. We must become the biggest society and culture show.
If Podcast Without Pretense ends up beating out both Stuff You Missed in History Class and Stuff You Should Know, I have a feeling I'm going to get rolled at my work. I'm just going to walk around the corner and
you're
they're
like,
going to be
a second.
4 very angry hosts.
Okay, fine. Let's pick, how about this? We'll just pick one thing to beat. Here's the thing with Alec Baldwin. That's what we have to beat.
Okay.
Yeah. Now he's got actually his ratings are worse than ours. He's rated 4.5 stars. Okay. He's got 810 reviews.
All we have to do is get maybe 10,000 people to sign up in one day on our podcast, and that'll screw up the iTunes algorithm enough. They'll propel us to number one.
This was episode 70, at least the one that we just recorded. This we're recording right now. I don't know what this is.
This is probably going to have to be lumped on to the very end of episode 70.
You want me to put them together?
Well, I mean, I would imagine so. It's obviously not next week's episode. Eric's here.
Well, I think it should just be.
That's very true. I forgot about that.
It's certainly not an episode, but it's interesting that it would just be tacked on at the end. So we say next week, and then we actually have an episode.
Yeah.
That just tacked on at the end, which is this.
Sure.
This was the next week.
Put about 30 seconds of dead space between the two episodes.
Okay, so like a hidden track?
Only the truly dedicated who are wondering, why the hell is there like 17 more minutes?
That's a excellent and terrible idea at the same time.
That's pretty much the very story of this podcast. Excellent and terrible ideas.
I wonder if we could get iTunes to actually notice us. What would it take to get their attention?
Subscribers? I mean, isn't that really all they do?
No, they also occasionally will have like editor's picks or whatever, and they'll feature a podcast.
Well, do we know anybody at iTunes?
I don't know anyone. I've had my show featured on iTunes. It was very flattering. I don't know what happened. I don't know how that decision was made.
Yeah.
But I was very grateful for it.
You know, what's hilarious is I've never once even thought about looking at like the What's Hot section or the All Podcast section of society and culture to even contemplate if we were ever on that list ever in the run of this show. Because I don't believe it would ever happen.
It's okay. This is the first time we've looked at the reviews in ever.
Ever?
Yes, and ever. I forgot it was there.
Yeah.
History in 5. These are the prosperity show. Our album art is just as bad as everybody else's, which is surprising. Like I made it like on iTunes, like in Pages.
I was about to say, are you suggesting that we should work harder to have worse album art?
For the most part, I think it's pretty much on par, which is scary because I must have spent about a couple minutes. Wait a second, what is this guy doing? Runaway thoughts. Oh, these are about questions and answers. It's a good thing because I didn't want to have a new rival.
Oh, come on, Ayaz. Your thoughts never run.
Nah, they're always in. Well, my thoughts are always have both their feet on the ground for speed walking.
Yeah, I think it'd be pretty much shuffle along thoughts.
Shuffle along. Yeah. I don't think that works considering the amount of rage I have.
Well, I don't know. Zombies seem pretty angry and they shuffle.
Are they angry? Or are they just misunderstood?
No, I think they're pretty angry.
I think they're just motivated.
Okay, that's fair. Anger could be motivation.
Actually, maybe they're not motivated enough. Why don't they move faster?
Depends on which version of zombies you're looking at. So if you're talking about World War Z, the book, they're slow. But if you're talking about World War Z, the movie, they're fast.
Shouldn't they be fast at some point? I mean, that's the case with I'm Legend, right? I guess they're not zombies, but they're something.
Well, I think the whole idea is that whatever it is that turns them into zombies also obviously greatly impairs any kind of neurological activity. So therefore, coordinating things like muscle movement would take more time. If it doesn't impact your neurological processes, that just means everyone's an evil, hungry bastard.
Oh, what it is. Oh, I watched Detention of the Dead the other day. That was pretty
good. Oh, I saw that was on Netflix. Yep, I haven't watched it.
What did you watch?
Free on Xbox or whatever. Oh, Detention of the Dead. I think actually it bills itself as The Breakfast Club with zombies. And really that only comes up – there's one scene where they're sitting in a circle smoking pot. That is about as close as it gets.
There's no dance sequence that breaks a door?
No, I don't think so.
We also didn't pick a movie for next week.
We did. I thought we did Dread.
Oh, did we?
Oh, that's right. That's right. Oh, I forgot.
That's why that's in my queue. All right.
That's why I was going to watch that movie.
I totally forgot.
But yeah, Dread is the next one up.
I wish that the website for Netflix had my most recently watched episodes besides just the most recently watched one. Because I would like to tell you about some of the horrible movies I've watched recently, but I can't remember what they were. There was some axe murderer movie where, you know, it's just another take on the whole supernatural slasher killer tormenting kids camping out in the woods. So essentially it's just another Friday the 13th ripoff. And it was pretty dreadful.
I watched 21 and Over.
I started that. I couldn't get into it.
It's not bad. Because
you mentioned it. And I couldn't really. Yeah.
But yeah, I think movie 43 set me up for that. Like, that was so bad. Like, I was 21 and over is not so bad. But that's probably because I was, my mindset was reset by movie 43, which I still have yet to finish. Although, I'm curious about that superhero speed dating thing with all those big stars.
I hear it's just not funny, just like the rest of it. So,
I saw that Don't Trust the Bitch in Apartment 23 is now on Netflix. That was a really good show.
I watched
Event.
It really was a good show, yeah.
Oh.
I watched Event Horizon the other day, again. We're doing a podcast about that for Tech Stuff. We're recording that tomorrow morning. So I'm going to be talking about the science and technology in Event Horizon.
As well as
how it's amazing that Lawrence Fishburne can be both an amazing actor and a terrible actor in the same film. I don't remember what else. There was something else I watched recently, and I can't remember what it was. It was another, like, just terrible movie.
Yeah, I know I watched another horror movie that was pretty bad, but I can't remember what it was.
I was going to suggest maybe we add Maniac to the list at some point. That's the remake of the 1980s exploitation film. It was made, I think, last year, but it's
got Elijah
Wood in it, yeah.
Oh, yeah. So,
it's the remake of an exploitation film with a you know, a lauded actor in the role of the main villain, well, anti-hero, I guess. So essentially a story about a killer who he kills women and then scalps them and then puts their scalps on mannequins.
I don't know. I'm put off by anything with Maniac in the title right now.
can't imagine why.
This is a completely random thing. I was asking a bunch of people if they remember that there was a video, a Weezer video, Buddy Holly, on the Windows 95 CD, installation CD. Do either of you guys remember that?
Well, I remember the music video to Buddy Holly, but I don't remember the installation CD.
I don't remember the music video being on the installation CD. I remember Beck. There was a Beck song on, what was it, XP? That was the Windows Media Player music. But I don't remember the music video of Buddy Holly.
I'm the only one apparently remembers this. I was with a bunch of nerds from work yesterday, and nobody remembered that. But it is – I had to look it up because now I was basically questioning myself since nobody's heard of this. It was in the – what I used to do with CDs is I would put them in the computer, and I would start looking at the directory structure. What else is on there?
Yeah.
And it was there. It was in the Fun Stuff folder. And there was a video for it right on the CD. But nobody knows it.
Yeah, apparently. The Microsoft Wikipedia, you are correct, sir.
Resulting in the sudden skyrocketing the popularity of the video and song that won Weezer a place in MTV Music Awards history. It was a real thing.
Yeah. I didn't doubt you. I just didn't remember it.
I'm just surprised that nobody I know is aware of this. I'll ask Twitter.
I don't think I even knew what technology was when Windows 95 came out.
I'll just do a true or false.
I was still recovering from getting out of college as a English major, focusing on Shakespeare.
Music video for Buddy Holly. Now you're listening to me live tweet. I'll record it.
Music video from Buddy Holly. That's the one that's done in the style of Happy Days.
Yes.
We're listening to you live tweet. The audience is not.
Yeah, are you still recording?
Yes.
Oh well, this is great radio. This is well worth waiting through those extra 30 seconds of dead air.
Yeah. So if you're listening to this part now, I'll tell you Jonathan's social security number. Ready? Set?
We do.
Go.
6, 7, 8.